It's time for Agriculture, presented by Turkana Farms in Germantown, New York, a small-scale producer of heritage breed livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres. They also produce a full array of garden vegetables, many of them heirloom varieties raised naturally, as well as an assortment of berries, including raspberries, blackberries, gooseberries, black, red, and white currants, mulberries, and elderberries. And now, here's Mark Scherzer.
Hard as it is of late to keep one's mind off the impeachment psychodrama playing out in Washington, there are other matters that necessarily require some mental focus here at the farm. The new barn is going up. Troy and Victoria are making decisions both about aesthetics, green roof or white, and practicalities. Where should the new power line go? They are paring down the sheep herd to a manageable winter size, planting cover crops where they think the soil will most benefit, and are selecting seeds to save for next year. That is, they're generally taking the managerial lead, and it gets me thinking about the shape of the future. A few weeks ago, the New York Times ran an op-ed by Sarah Smarsh about the rural brain gain. In it, she suggests that the flow of rural residents to cities is reversing. She cites, among other examples, a study of rural Minnesota, which found that a majority of the state's rural counties gained early career to mid-career residents, that is, younger folks, with ample socioeconomic assets, that means education, in the decade from 2000 to 2010. A third of the inflow consisted of people returning to the places where they grew up, while the rest were new recruits. Marsh tells us that this is happening because while 80% of Americans live in urban areas, when asked in polls what life they'd like to lead, rural life is the most wished for. She paints a picture in which the countryside is not only repopulating, but also becoming more diverse, tolerant, and cosmopolitan as a result of this brain gain. It's a picture of cultural vibrancy and not torpor. And I can easily see Troy and Victoria and their young farmer friends, like the ones who came to dinner last weekend, raised respectively in Brooklyn and in the Philadelphia suburbs, fitting in this picture. All of them college-educated, well-traveled, sophisticated in their tastes, and embracing friends from a broad range of cultural, racial, and sexual categories, and all of them farming. The Mid-Hudson Valley, thanks to its proximity to New York City, may be an extreme example of the successful inmixing of urban vibe with rural sensibilities. There are probably not many places in the prairie counties Miss Smarsh writes about where the farmers can and do go from slopping pigs and harvesting beans by day to full-throated response to a transgressive drag show at night. Here it happens. But while taking great pleasure that the rural and urban can so fully come together in such a beautiful setting as this, I wonder how these young farmers will sustain this life. Is it going to be viable over the long term? I realize that these 20-somethings are doing the sort of work Victoria so vividly described last week as physically punishing and hard to do as one ages. To boot, the work is denied the prestige and respect it deserves, hence putting agricultural workers at the lowest end of the compensation scale. Maybe those born to farm families or privileged young people with family nest eggs or other support can take a chance on farming, but the vast majority of Americans, no matter how much they romanticize the independence and nature connectedness of the small farmer, would probably never risk embarking on that journey. Miss Smarsh reports triumphantly on one college senior who founded a direct-to-consumer beef company in Odo County, Nebraska, and sold $52,000 worth of meat in the past 9 months. Sounds highly successful, and that may indeed be a good gross revenue for a startup, but then I think what the costs must have been to produce that beef, accounting for acquiring the livestock, feeding and caring for it, and obtaining the land on which the beef grazes. After expenses, this young man would have precious little, if any, of that $52,000 left to live on. The young seller of beef might be able to make above poverty wages if he substantially increases his revenue, but that would require dramatically ramping up the scale of production. That was the message Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue delivered to Wisconsin dairy farmers this week, according to CBS News. He told them that, and I quote, In America, the big get bigger and the small go out, unquote. In Wisconsin, one of the nation's biggest dairy states, farmers are contending with falling milk prices and declining markets resulting from Mr. Trump's trade wars. The state lost 465 dairy farms in 2017, 638 in 2018, and 551 so far in 2019. A disproportionate share of the federal money aimed at insulating farmers from the effect of the trade wars is going to big agribusiness, not to the little guys. Wisconsin state legislators are considering increasing appropriations to combat depression and rising suicide rates among farmers. Some small dairy farmers, hearing Mr. Perdue's big get big or get out message, left the conference where he spoke feeling that there was no place or future for them. Ms. Marsh's op-ed points out that many of the Democratic candidates for president have very innovative proposals to support small farming and can justify that support because of its lower environmental impact and contribution to public health. But these candidates are, right now, just candidates. Even if Mr. Trump, the friend of big agribusiness and fast food, is removed from office, the rest of the administration, which tilts so strongly against the small farmer, will still be in control for another 2 years at least. I watched Troy and Victoria contemplate not only what the farm will be doing in the future, but what they will be doing too. They're figuring out how to generate off-farm income by working remotely from the farm, which they are able to do because we, unlike vast swaths of rural America, enjoy fast broadband connections, or at part-time jobs in the area. Their challenge in balancing the demands of farming with the need to generate real money represents the struggle of almost all small-scale American agriculture. After all, the average American farm family earns 78% of its income from off-farm sources. We have yet to arrive at a public policy that really supports the small farm endeavor as a full livelihood. The goal of many agricultural initiatives is only to make the balancing act easier. I watch them in admiration and in trepidation. I hope this is the generation that will turn around the dynamic of farmers sacrificing their financial well-being to do something of such broad benefit. I hope they can, contrary to Secretary Perdue's prediction, stay small and stay in. But I don't think they can do it entirely on their own. Broader public is going to have to support that effort politically and through the prices we pay financially.
Agriculture is underwritten by Turkana Farms, LLC, a small-scale producer of heritage-bred livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres in Germantown, New York. More information, 518-537-3815.